All right. I see him in the waiting room. I'm worried to call him one of our favorites because he is north of the Red River. He does work for the flagship radio station of the Oklahoma Sooners. He is an Oklahoma fan, but he's a good dude. We love chopping it up, talking Texas OU with our man Tyler McComas from the Ref in Norman. T-Mac, good to see you, my man. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Thanks for joining us this morning.
I don't know if I'm everybody else's favorite, but I'm definitely one of your favorites, okay? And hey, this is your thing, all right? You make the calls. But bringing me on after the dude that you just had on previously with the good Texas takes and everything, I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Well, you know, I told you we were going to be talking about Oklahoma and y'all's plans in the portal and just the future of the Red River Shootout. But really, I just wanted to dunk on you for 23-6 for the next hour. So I just wanted to talk about all the great memories that both of us had, because we were both there at the Cotton Bowl in October, and it was great memories for both of us this year. So I just wanted to get your take on that for the next 55 minutes.
No problem with talking about that game from October for an hour, because at least it's better than what happened to me over Christmas, all right? And at every family Christmas, all I got, I just want to enjoy the holidays. I just want to have a good time. What happened? How did we blow that 17-0 lead? What happened? What was it? Was it shaving points? Like, was the mob involved in this? Like, what's going? I had to answer Christmas Eve, Christmas Day. How the hell did OU blow a 17-point lead? So, dude, if you want to talk about Ryan Niblett taking a punt back to the house in the Cotton Bowl, it can't be as worse as the past 2 weeks for me. So that's fine. Let's do it, man. I'm open.
I guess you know that the 2 years Texas made the playoff in 23 and 24, they didn't lose till after Christmas, right? So I've never had to deal with those sort of Christmas conversations about what went wrong for Texas in the playoff game that they lost. Well, I guess I'll get your thoughts on what went wrong for Oklahoma. Sorry to be the millionth person to ask you. I don't have any conspiracy theories or mob theories to get to, but man, I mean, it couldn't have been a better start for Oklahoma in that playoff game against Alabama. You guys are up 17-0. You know, Gaylord is rocking. Alabama was doing nothing offensively. It looked like the Sooners were going to cruise. It almost looked like a name your score type of game. And obviously things start to fall apart. You get the John Mateer pick six, and just Oklahoma just totally falls apart in the second half. What went wrong? Why did all of that happen the other night?
Make the playoff before the year, and that did not happen. But that Friday-Saturday little stretch had to be the most – one of the more enjoyable parts of your season. Watching OU blow a 17-point lead and then Aggie be Aggie the very next day and score 3 points. So I'm glad that you've had such a great holiday season up to this point. What went wrong? I don't know. I'm still trying to figure that out, man, because – the way that OU was winning, you know, you knew that that wasn't sustainable. At some point, they were going to have to muster up some sort of a consistent offense if they really wanted to push for any sort of a national championship hopes. And for 20 minutes of that game, BK, the team that we had talked about all year long, hey, man, this defense is good. This special teams is elite as well. If they can just get some average offense, some good offense, this might be a team that can push for a national championship. And finally, in the 13th game of the year, we finally saw it for 20 minutes. Oh, dude, John Mateer's ripping throws over the middle. Defense is suffocating. They're going up and down the field and scoring 17-0. Your boy's got a flight to Pasadena already. I mean, I'm going. I remember thinking during the game, damn, I should have brought like a rose to like have in my mouth at this point or something like that. Everybody's looking at flights. Like, I mean, seriously, it was like one of those. And it looked like Alabama had no energy whatsoever. And then it felt like in two plays, man, things completely flipped. It's like a 3rd and 3. Mateer throws to Xavier Robinson down the field. If he catches it, it's a touchdown. Instead, he drops it and they punt it. And then the punt block that wasn't a punt block, and he just dropped the ball and his foot didn't move up. I don't know. That two-play sequence changed the game along with the terrible pick six. And here we are. It's weird, dude. It was weird going into Christmas and not being able to talk about a bowl game coming up or a football game. I don't know. It's just been very, very odd in a loss that is going to stick with me and us for a very long time, which I know makes you happy. So there you
that
go.
That is so glorious. People were looking at. I'm sure there were a couple of people in the suites with the good Wi-Fi who were buying flights to California
yes.
for New Year's. Oh, that's
yes.
great to hear. My gosh. So the year as a whole, Tyler, I mean, on one hand, I want to get your thoughts before I give my take on this. And I think most of our audience has heard my take on this. It's 10-2. You make the college football playoff a year after going 6-7. Overall, is this deemed a successful year for the Sooners, or because of the 17-0 choke job in the playoff, maybe coupled with the loss to Texas, not making it to a conference championship game, like, how are Oklahoma fans, and I guess more specifically, how are you viewing this overall 2025 season for OU football?
Based on what your own preseason expectations were and what everybody else's were, and it's a successful season in a couple of different reasons that I'll give in a minute, but it's a wasted opportunity is really what it is. I mean, this is the best defense that OU's had maybe since like the early 2000s and some of those really big time Bob Stoops crews that they had. So you wasted. I mean, you know, this was a defense that could have won you a national championship. That was a special teams group, even though it was bad against Alabama, where you had a Groza Award winner. Like, that special teams group is the best special teams group they've had in a long time as well.
Yeah.
Successful season because you won 10 games with that schedule, went on the Red November run that you went on. But you feel just kind of saying you missed an opportunity, you know, with that defense, with the special teams up 17-0 against Alabama. But overall, it is a success, and here's why. Because I see Michigan going through a transition right now. And I think they made a really good hire, but that's a big transition. Same thing with Auburn, with Florida and LSU. There were a ton of coaching changes this year in college football. It's going to be a reset for some programs out there and some in the SEC. I'll just tell you that OU was at least having the thought, having the conversations after the Ole Miss game, that second loss they had in late October. The thought was, hey, man, if November turns into a disaster and we go 0-4, and they had at Tennessee, at Alabama, Missouri, and LSU in that November schedule, there was at least kind of the thought of, all right, what do we need to do moving forward to kind of get this right with Brent Venables? And they went on the 4-0 run, so it's a success because you don't have to have a major reset at head coach, a massive buyout that you've never paid for, totally rebuild the roster. You're left saying we missed an opportunity, but at least you have solid footing, really, for kind of one of the first times in the Brent Venables era moving forward. It just sucked the way that it ended, man. I mean, it sucks.
Yeah, well, I guess to follow up on that, and you might have adjusted your mic or something, Tyler. Maybe it's something on my end. I am in a, you know, Batman's lair over here in Columbus, Ohio right now. But, you know, Brent Venables, you know, Bucky and I talked to you before the season, and we obviously talked to you the week of Red River. We just get your thoughts on Oklahoma football and the pulse of the program. And, you know, we asked you, and I'm sure a bunch of people have asked you, I'm sure you've talked about it a bunch on your radio show, about the future of Brent Venables. Is that conversation completely dead? I mean, look, it's college football. Like, James Franklin was in the semifinals of the playoff last year, and then he gets fired not even 2 months into the season this year. So I guess I get that if Oklahoma gets off to like a 3-4 start next year, then maybe a move will be made. But does it feel like Brent Venables did enough this season to where there are no more hot seat conversations going on with him?
We're not having any of those conversations right now, man. None. And nobody wanted to I shouldn't say nobody wanted to fire Brent Venables. There was a large section of the fan base that wanted to before the season and in the season, but nobody wanted to pay that massive buyout because OU's never had to pay that buyout before. You like the defense that he's built. You just knew how hard of a reset it was going to be if you fired a guy at this point in the SEC. I mean, it was just going to be a tough road back. He's not in any sort of a hot seat whatsoever. Now, like you said, I think at OU or Texas or a school in the SEC, you're always a year or a few games away from being right back on the hot seat. But now, no, it's looked at as a successful season. It's all we back Brent once again. The conversations here are, dude, you got to get the offense right. You have got to figure out the offense because it was an absolute disaster this year. It was a disaster. John Mateer was not the player you thought. Jade Knott, you paid all this money to. And that was a disaster this year. Ben Arbuckle, yep. I think he had like a C season his first year as an OC, maybe. They're going to have a good defense once again next year. You can't continue to waste really good elite defenses. BK, OU had some numbers defensively that weren't just the best in the SEC. They were the best in the SEC like the past 4 or 5 years. But they're not going to go any further, and they may not get back to the playoff if the offense isn't any better. So I'd say not a whole lot of conversation at all on Brent. It's all about how can they get this offense going? How can they get it from abysmal once again to at least respectful?
Yeah, I feel like it was better in 2025 than it was in 2024, but that was such a low bar to clear considering just how much of a disaster last year was for you guys. Well, how do you fix, not the offense, how do you fix John Mateer? Like, 4 games into the year, that guy was the favorite to win the Heisman Trophy. He gets hurt, then the Texas game happens, and then just in the second half, he wasn't the same player. You saw some flashes of really good play, but I think the Alabama game was a kind of a microcosm of John Mateer's season, where early on, all right, he showed you that, hey, this guy's got a live arm, he's a great talent, he's dual threat, he can make some things happen, and then you see some of the decision-making, some of the inaccuracies, obviously the horrible pick six, and it's just it felt like his year wasn't the same. After that injury, Oklahoma's got a lot invested in that guy. He's back for 2026. There's no quarterback battle or controversy in Norman. How do you make sure that John Mateer has that type of season that can get the Sooner offense where you think it needs to be?
The biggest thing that could have happened this offseason to get the OU offense back on track has already happened, BK. And that's to get PK out of Austin, Texas. So the OU kryptonite is out. Thank God. Glad to see that guy go. Bring Coach Boone back. That's fine. But get PK the hell out of here. Get his confidence back, I guess, with John Mateer. That's not easy to do in this league and at that position. They got to get a run game. They've got to get more difference makers at wide receiver outside Isaiah Satania. The tight end position can't be a complete and absolute disaster next year. I mean, the situation around him has got to be better. Like, he's got to be better himself because, dude, he made some terrible decisions this year. And, yeah, I think immediately after the thumb was a problem, but I think it ended up being more of a confidence issue than anything, you know, as the season went on. Like, there were plays to be had, and either, one, he's not seeing guys run wide open, or, two, he's got, like, a layup throw, just like an easy throw right beyond the line of scrimmage for first down. And he's overthrowing it or underthrowing it or throwing it. I mean, he's just – the confidence was busted. He's got to get that back. I think more than anything, they've got to figure out to have a running game around him. Run game was not good. And if they don't find a run game around him, I don't know how much better the OU offense will be next year. So, simply said, they got to put better players around him. They got to have a better offensive line around him because John Mateer showed this past year that he can't do it himself. And he's prone to making some high-level throws, sure. But he'll also make some big-time mistakes, man. You just can't have that next year because I think expectations are going to be a lot higher going into next year than they were going into this past season.
Yeah, since you brought up PK and you brought up Texas, this is your fault, Tyler. You're bringing this upon yourself. Just want you to know that it's now been 815 days since Oklahoma has scored a touchdown against the Longhorns. And that
but that last one was pretty sweet, though, wasn't it? That last touchdown, wasn't it great?
No. Oh. It wasn't
sweet. It's one of those touchdowns that, and this is why I'd rather beat Texas like that than beat them 65-13 or 63-14. We got a few of those to choose from. Is every year in the Cotton Bowl, they replay that. Let's look back at this Cotton Bowl classic, you know, when they show that play. So I like breaking the hearts like that.
Yeah. And we all get to be reminded that you guys chose Jackson Arnold over Dylan Gabriel after that season. Great move. Thank you very much for that one, sir. Appreciate it.
Hey, but real quick on the PK thing.
Yeah.
So I'm driving to my show the day that that happens, and I'm listening to our station, the show before us, and I hear one of our guys say, wow, Texas just released that they fired PK and they've hired Will Muschamp. Here was my honest thought in that moment. I said, oh, no. Not oh, no, in Will Muschamp is coming back. Oh, no, of one of our guys just got trolled on social media. Clearly, he just read a tweet that is not legit. Someone's out, some Texas account or somebody is out there trolling, and man, the text line's going to rip him. He's going to get made fun of. Like, how could you even read that without making sure? How do you make that mistake? And then I get on there and I say, oh my God, that's real. I mean, I'm not in the circle like you are, but dude, that shocked me.
That was my reaction too. I thought it was fake news. Someone sent me a picture of a tweet that said Pete Kwiatkowski was getting let go. And I was like, all right, yeah, this guy got hacked. Like, that's fake news. Someone got Sintelled here. I think a lot of Longhorn fans felt the same way, right? That was not on anybody's radar. And that's one thing. And Sark isn't the only guy who does this really well. But with how many people cover the University of Texas in this age of social media that we live in, the fact that a move like that can be kept under wraps for as long as that one could. I mean, nobody had any beat on that. I'm not the biggest Texas insider out there. None of the diehard insiders who were locked in talking to sources 24/7, 365, the Chip Browns of the world, none of those guys had any inkling that this was even a possibility, let alone actually going to happen when it did. So you weren't the only one thinking that somebody had gotten hacked or someone was getting trolled when that happened. That was a stunner for all of us.
I mean, it's one of the biggest stunning stories that I can remember seeing in the offseason. So after my shocked feeling went away, I initially was, okay, I feel like, and you and I have talked about this, the defense has been the better side of the ball for Texas for, like, what, the past 3 or 4 years now? So a change there, like, I think the way it's been viewed here is like, okay, good, like, get that guy out of here. We don't really know the big reasons why or why it happened. It doesn't make, you know, too much sense here. But Will Muschamp clearly has a pedigree of strong defense. But I said this yesterday on the show. After the initial shock wore off, it was, it's going to be another long off season because I can already hear it now. Sark's going all in for 2026. That's what this means. All this means is Sark's pushing all his chips to the table. He's going all in for 2026. Oh, boy. It's a big championship push this year for Sark. So it's going to be another exhausting offseason hearing that crap for the next several months. Great.
We just did our last 3 weeks of shows. Thank you very much, Tyler. Appreciate that. Yeah, look, I don't think Texas will be preseason number one next year, so you guys won't have to deal with that leading up to the season, but there's going to be plenty of conversations surrounding the Longhorns. I mean, Texas will be preseason top five. Oklahoma is going to be right around there, you would think. So, I mean, the game's always fun in October, but it's nice that both teams are at a high level right now. That makes the game feel a little bit bigger.
I bet here's a prediction for you. I bet when Ohio State and Texas play, it'll be a 1-versus-2 matchup. I would bet Ohio State probably won preseason. They'll have Jeremiah Smith coming back. They'll have the quarterback coming back as well, right, Julian Sayin? Yep. And you know they're super talented. They may win the national championship this year. I think it could be like a combination of like Texas, Ohio State, Georgia. So I bet it's a top three matchup. I think it could be 1-2 in Austin, though, early next year.
It could be. That game week two of the 2026 season. I'm with you. I think Ohio State's your likely preseason number one. They also have Bo Jackson, their freshman sensation running back, coming back. So those triplets on offense, their three best players all returning. And, yeah, Ohio State could be back-to-back champs when they make their way to DKR next September. It'll be an interesting one to watch for sure. So, you know, we were talking about, Stephen and I were talking about Cam Coleman and the likelihood of him coming to Texas in hour one, and if it's worth it. You know, we're talking about a $2 million+ price tag for 1 year of Cam Coleman's services. You know, he talked earlier about Oklahoma being in the market for more skill position players on offense. I think the Sooners have more of a need for wide receiver help than Texas does, to be quite honest with you. Are you hearing that the Sooners could be a serious player in the Cam Coleman sweepstakes?
Man, I was hearing that all the way back to the season before Hugh Freeze got fired. And I don't know if you guys were talking about Cam Coleman or hearing about Cam Coleman to Texas or to A&M during the season, but it just always felt like he was going to the transfer portal. And the more that I've thought about it, it was, well, of course his name is going to enter in the transfer portal. He'd be in the portal if Auburn was a 9-3 football team right now, because he's just making over $1 million, apparently, and someone's going to pay him $2 million, if not north of that. Like, of course, a guy that valuable is going to get in the portal and see who wants to overpay for him and give him a big payday. So I had heard back in the season that OU was in good shape for him, but you know how it is, man, especially with the transfer portal. Like, that might sound good at the time, but nothing is ever a certainty, especially that far out. And the final offer is going to be the final offer from somebody. I think OU is going to offer Cam Coleman. And I think that OU will make a very competitive offer for Cam Coleman. Do I think they will offer him $2 million? No, I do not. I do think OU is going to be very aggressive this offseason, trying to get running back help, get wide receiver help, get offensive talent help. But they just haven't been the type of school. If you guys in the chat want to throw out your Broklahoma jokes, you go, go do it, fine, whatever. But they haven't really been the school that we're just going to outbid everybody, right? Like they'll promise, or you know, they'll make an enticing offer, they'll make a competitive offer. But I would guess both Texas and Texas A&M would probably offer Cam Coleman more if I had to guess. But OU will be competitive, and we'll see how much that they're truly in the running for. There you go. Thank you.
Yeah, right, exactly. OU is too broke for Coleman. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting decision that a bunch of different schools are going to have to make, because everyone's interested in Cam Coleman. I mean, he's a stud, 6'3", 200 pounds, you know, 1,300 yards, 13 touchdowns the last 2 years in the SEC, playing with awful quarterbacks, including your best friend, Jackson Arnold, this past year. So if he could put up those numbers with that coach on that team with those QBs, like imagine what he could do in a good system with all of that talent around him. I think everybody, every competitive team knows that, but also everybody's got holes to fill. Oklahoma's got areas they need to address. Texas has a bunch of areas they need to address. A&M's got a bunch of areas they need to address. So is anybody going to be willing to pay exactly what Cam Coleman is looking for? And also, you know, does Cam Coleman only care about the money? Does he only care about the money? Or could he look at Texas and say, well, look what they did with Adonai Mitchell. Look what they did with Matthew Golden. Like, I'm better than both of those guys. At least I'm like a better talent on paper than both of those guys. Imagine what they can do with me. Like, does he look at that? Does he care about the quarterback he plays with? Does he care about being a part of a playoff team after missing bowl games in back-to-back years with Auburn? Or is it as simple as, hey, man, it's college football in 2025, 26. Get as much money as you can, and whoever the highest bidder is for Cam Coleman, that's where he ends up.
Yeah. So I think he is that good, by the way. I mean, OU's played Auburn the past 2 years. I think he is legit. I think he is that good. I think another thing that could play into this is Isaiah Satania, by far and away OU's best wide receiver. He's thinking about going to the draft. Yep. And if he goes to the draft and you lose your number one guy and it's like, oh, God, we're scrambling to find – maybe you'd be a little bit more desperate to offer Cam Coleman a little bit of money. But I think he is that good. And I think in any other situation outside of maybe Ohio State, he's immediately the number one wide receiver on the team. I think that's true for OU. I think that's probably true for A&M, and I think it'd be true for Texas as well. And isn't it kind of interesting? Because forever, OU and Texas in the Big 12, if OU and Texas are competing for a recruit or a transfer portal guy, you know, if they go to one of your, you know, your rival school, then, oh, man, that stinks. Like, we got to face that guy for the next 3-4 years, however long it is. But if a big-time player didn't go to Texas, you almost didn't care if they go to the SEC because you're probably never going to see him again. It's just it's interesting going to the SEC now, because if you miss out on a big-time 4-star or 5-star guy, you're probably going to be playing him a couple of times throughout his career. And this is the case with Cam Coleman. It's OU's already seen him twice. He's not going back to Auburn. So if OU doesn't get him, you don't face Auburn next season, but you might see him in the Cotton Bowl next year. You might see him when A&M comes to Norman next year. So it's just a little bit, I don't know, just another reason why the SEC is so different, because if you miss out on somebody, you're going to be facing that guy, and that was not always the case in the Big 12, you know?
That's a great point. Yeah, it felt like all the best recruits were either going to Texas, Oklahoma, or somewhere in the SEC, and now you've got Texas and Oklahoma in the SEC. Obviously, you throw Ohio State and Oregon and some other schools from other conferences in there as well, but in the case of Cam Coleman, I think he's going to stay in the Southeastern Conference. I don't think Ohio State is in the market for a receiver like that. I don't think Oregon is in the market for a receiver like that, so I'd be pretty surprised. Plus, Cam Coleman is from Alabama, so he's from SEC country. I don't think he wants to go too far away from anywhere. So, you know, you've heard A&M linked to him. Obviously, the Aggies spent a bunch of money on receivers in the portal last offseason and had a ton of success with Mario Craver and KC Concepcion. You're hearing Alabama be in the mix as well. Obviously, you're hearing Texas be in the mix. Now some conversation about Oklahoma potentially getting involved. This is going to be a fun one to watch. I know back channel conversations happen all the time. I know the portal doesn't officially open until Friday, but we know conversations between players and agents and teams have been happening for a while. I feel like we might have to wait a little bit on this Cam Coleman one. I don't think this is one we get like Friday at midnight, boom, all of a sudden we already know where Cam Coleman is going. I think this thing's going to drag out a little bit as his agent tries to drive up the price and get into a bidding war to see exactly what everybody is going to offer here.
Hey, I want Cam Coleman in Norman. You want Cam Coleman in Austin. We don't want Cam Coleman in College Station. So yeah. I hope it does go on for a while. And here's what I hope, and you might agree with this as well. I hope Cam Coleman takes a visit to College Station, because Cam Coleman seems like a pretty normal dude, good head on his shoulders. And hopefully he goes to College Station and he says, what the hell is wrong with these people? Why are they so weird? Why are they so strange? What's going on here? There's no way that I want to be a part of this for the next year or two. So I'm hoping in the Cam Coleman recruitment that he at least visits College Station and sees Colt Aggie before he actually makes a decision. That's what I'm hoping for.
That'd be great. But my counter to that is I feel like Auburn is the A&M of the state of Alabama. You know, I feel like they've got that weird Colty fan base that just lives in the shadow of their big brother 24/7. So he might be accustomed to that kind of lifestyle.
So I've been fortunate enough to make pretty much all the road trips in the SEC the past 2 years, except for South Carolina this year. Auburn's been one of the best, man. I mean, and when OU went to Auburn, they had already lost two or three games. It was early in the season. Not one bad word the entire time. Fans were awesome. Their tailgating is extremely underrated. I don't know when Texas goes to Jordan-Hare next. I know it's not this year, but it's. I would highly suggest going to Auburn if you can do it. And I know you guys go there this year. Neyland is the best atmosphere that I've ever seen before.
Ever.
Now, they were wearing their Halloween costumes and they did the cute dark mode thing and everything else. But it was awesome. I mean, there was a lot on the line for both teams that night. If you guys have the means, Tiger Stadium's cool. But I saw Neyland at its best. Knoxville is awesome town. Like, that place is legit, man.
How are those fans? I feel like Tennessee fans have a reputation of hating everybody, and I think they hate Texas because of the UT thing. Like, they get so butthurt about Texas being UT, even though Texas called itself UT first and it was a university before Tennessee was. But are they mean? I feel like they're just a ruthless, obnoxious, over-the-top fan base. Was that the experience you had out there?
So on the whole UT thing, I go on a radio show sometimes in Nashville talking OU, and they call Texas UT Junior. So just a heads up on that, UT Junior. That's what they go with.
Yeah.
Nice. I've had a couple of bad run-ins with Tennessee fans. They were fine in the trip to Knoxville. They were okay, but when they came to Norman and won, here's what annoys me, and this goes back to my hate for Texas A&M. One of the things that I hate about Texas A&M is if you've never done jack squats in the history of your program, but you have like one good year and you act like you invented the sport, that annoys me. And A&M is very, very prone to having like a good month and they act like, well, we're the new flagship university in the state of Texas. Watch out, everybody. And that's kind of what I felt about Tennessee. Is they were having a really good year, and they acted like, well, I mean, you're just not going to last in the SEC. You have no chance. We're big, bad Tennessee. I'm like, dude, you've sucked for a long time. What are you talking about? So yeah. Tennessee definitely has this, or at least had this, we've had a good year, so we basically invented the sport. Please bow down to us and tell us how awesome we are on our way out. But
that's awesome.
Neyland's cool.
That is awesome.
And Knoxville's awesome.
Yeah, Texas's SEC opener next year at Tennessee, so it could be a fun one. I'm sure a bunch of Longhorn fans will be making the trek out there. All right, we'll get back into some Texas OU conversation. We've got Tyler McComas from The Ref in Norman joining us here this morning. Before we dive back in, though, I want to give a few shout-outs to a few of our great sponsors, including Woods Comfort Systems. They are the best HVAC and plumbing company in Central Texas. They've been around for 70 years now, so if you have an issue with your AC, it's getting cold, if you need to make sure that heater is working properly when we actually get to the winter in Central Texas, if Now, someone came over the holiday season and broke one of your toilets. Don't try to fix HVAC or plumbing problems on your own. Call the experts at Woods Comfort Systems. They're incredibly reliable. They will tell you when they're going to be at your place, and they will actually show up when they tell you they're going to be at your place. It's why they've been around for 70 years. This is not a fly-by-night company. They know what they're doing. They know how to treat people. They are the best. All you have to do is go to their website, woodscomfortsystems.com, for more, or give them a call at 512-842-5066. And also some love to Olipop. Oh, man, wish I had some Olipop here with me in Ohio. But I know I can get it in Ohio because this stuff is available all over the country. Great-tasting soda that's actually good for you. If you haven't tried this yet, you are missing out. Talk about a New Year's resolution. I know we still have a couple of days left in 2025, but if your New Year's resolution is trying to be healthier in 2026, so many of you are, Olipop is the easiest way to do just that. Because it's soda, it tastes like soda, so you're going to enjoy drinking it, but it's also good for you. 9 grams of fiber in every can, and ingredients that support good digestive health. Pick some up at HEB, Whole Foods, Target, Costco, Walmart, wherever you shop, make sure you shop Olipop. And T-Mac, you were telling me before the show that you recently had a purchase from our great friends at Sue Patrick. Do I have that right?
Yeah. Nice setup, because I was going to interrupt you and say, hey, can I do an ad read? This is not a paid ad read, but look, I've got a Longhorn in my family. Every family has that one person, I guess. Yeah, my stepdad is a big Texas fan. So I've ordered from Sue Patrick before, and honestly, like, not just saying this, like, I've had great experiences with them, but this one was the best because I'm a late shopper. I feel like maybe you can relate a little bit to that, you know? Oh, yeah. Late shopping. And so, like, during one of my shows, I ordered, like, he's huge Texas baseball. Like likes everything Longhorns, but really likes Texas baseball. Got him a burnt orange. Oh, it was just awful looking. Texas baseball shirt. I ordered, a Monday at 4 o'clock. And I feel like by the time I got home Wednesday, it was already at the front door. And I don't think I paid extra for shipping or anything. Is it Jay that's at Sue Patrick?
Yep.
Even wrote, like, thank you on the shipment. Sue Patrick's awesome, man. I don't love what I bought, but for a late shopper like myself, like, Jay made sure that it got there on time, so I appreciate that.
How about that? That is awesome. They'll even ship to Norman, Oklahoma. That is crazy right there. I figured you were buying, like, a Longhorn decal to put upside down on your car or something, which, thanks to all the Sooner fans who do that, supporting the University of Texas, giving us more money with those purchases. We really appreciate that. But, yeah, shout out to Sue Patrick right there. They are the absolute best. And you're right. Everyone has that cool member of their family, their extended family that they love more than everybody else. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to say who your favorite family member is, but you all have one. And it's nice to know you have one of those with your stepdad, Tyler. That's great.
Yeah, it was, hey, thanks for the Texas baseball shirt. Thanks for you spending your money to buy that. Oh, by the way, how did you guys blow that 17-point lead? Great Christmas.
That is so, love the holidays. Is so great. That is so great. All right, Tyler McComas from the Ref in Norman here talking Texas and OU. I'm going to ask you a question that, I'm going to throw up in my mouth asking you this. And
Longhorn fans
are going to hate me for this. And you might hate me for this. Sooner fans might hate me for this as well. You know, Oklahoma needs a running back, right? There's a horrible rushing attack for the Sooners this year. And there's a guy just left Texas, had a lot of success against Oklahoma the last 2 years, the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah.
He was in need of a new home. He's from the Dallas area. Oklahoma has recruited a bunch of DFW kids over the years.
Recruited him,
of course, offered him as well out of DeSoto High School. It's something that makes me sick. My stomach is churning just thinking about it. But is there any talk about Oklahoma going after Trey Wisner in the transfer portal?
We've had that conversation. You know, when I lay awake at night, I often think about what's the worst or the most fun possible way to beat Texas. Well, first, we got to score a touchdown in the game. I think that's very fair to say.
Right.
But what would be an incredibly fun way to do it? Oh, my God, if, like, Trey Wisner broke off, like, a Kennedy Brooks-style run back in 2021 to beat them that time. Oh, man, that would be fantastic. I think, as of right now, OU has other portal targets at running back. such as the North Texas running back, Caleb Hawkins, who's from the state of Oklahoma, actually. I think Texas is in on him as well. Texas, OU, and Oklahoma State. Maybe he follows his head coach to OSU, and sounds like his quarterback might go there as well. I wouldn't put it at 0% that OU at least kicks the tires on Trey Wisner, because he's been productive. Again, OU's recruited him. They've got some familiarity with him. But I don't know. I wouldn't say that it's likely right now because they have other portal targets that are out there. But if you can, like, at least bring him in and it's for the right price and the right money, like, I think Trey Wisner's a really good back. And clearly Texas is looking to upgrade at that spot. They got a new running backs coach. What's the thought? Is that they want the kid from Florida? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah. Jaden Ball, who is yet to enter the transfer portal. I mean, he's the top target. It's no secret. And look, I think Texas would have hired Jabbar Jalouk as their running backs coach regardless, but obviously they were hoping that Jalouk was going to be able to convince his second team all SEC running back to follow him to Austin, Texas. There's no doubt.
So, you know, we still come from the thought of how could you ever go from Texas to Oklahoma or Oklahoma from Texas? It would feel weird. It'd feel weird for you guys. It'd feel weird for us if Trey Wisner was wearing an OU uniform, but that's just the day and age. What Brennan Thompson did it. If Trey Wisner were to do it, he certainly wouldn't be the last guy to do it. I would probably say no right now, but if they don't get Caleb Hawkins and if they don't get some of these other running backs that they've targeted and they're going to go get a running back in the transfer portal, if the price ends up being right, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily be shocked if Trey Wisner was wearing an OU uniform next year. I think that there's some people around here that, like, love the idea of at least pursuing that.
Right. Yeah, I think there are some A&M fans in College Station who probably love that idea. I mean, Trey Wisner saved his best games for those rivalry matchups. And, you know, OU and Texas A&M got to see firsthand just how good Trey Wisner can be. So I would understand if both of those schools at least kick the tires. But, yeah, it's a disgusting thought as a Texas fan. I mean, Trey Wisner, look, any time a Longhorn would transfer to one of those schools, it'd be disappointing. But I mean, Trey Wisner was such a fan favorite, such a culture guy, such a locker room guy. You know, great story, 3-star, kind of an afterthought on the recruiting trail, working his way up, barely saw the field as a freshman, and then led the Longhorns in rushing in each of the last two seasons. Like, that would be brutal to see him. It's already going to suck watching him play anywhere besides Texas. But if he were to go to one of those two places, dude, that's tough right there.
Well, Texas is going to get some really good skill talent in the portal. I would bet on that being the case. So I'll ask you a question about your own team. Pre-portal, how confident are you that Texas will be better in 2026 than they were in 2025?
From a talent standpoint, from a record standpoint, from a what?
Yeah, just like more, I'd say, yeah, not so much record, just overall just talent. Will they be a more talented football team?
I think so. I mean, again, like, it all depends on what happens in the portal. That goes without saying, and they're losing a lot. But I do think so. You know, Texas was top five amongst Power Four teams in most offensive yards from underclassmen. So I know no Texas fan, it's going to sound like an excuse. And look, Texas was preseason number one. They should have found a way to make the playoff. It's a disappointment that they didn't get in the playoff. So I'm not trying to take a moral victory here. But Texas did get a lot of production from younger guys on the offensive side of the football this year, and they're going to have a bunch of dudes on that side of the ball coming back next season. I don't think there's any way, Tyler, the offensive line is as bad in 2026 as it was in 2025. I mean, Texas had its worst rushing offense since 1944 this year. That's 81 years. So I just think it's kind of safe to say that the run game is going to be better next season as well. And I think with Arch, with how much better he got in the second half of this season, I think it feels like it's obvious that he's going to take another step in 2026. So, yeah, I mean, the offensive side of the football, I think there's no question that they will be better in 2026. Defense is a bit more of a question. You know, you're losing Anthony Hill, was an All-American first or early second-round pick. You're losing Michael Taft, who's been the heart and soul of that unit for the last few years. You know, you're losing Ethan Burke, who's been really good on the edge. And seven starters are gone from that side of the football. And obviously, you've got the question at defensive coordinator with Will Muschamp taking over for Pete Kwiatkowski. So not as confident saying yes on the defensive side of the ball, but overall I will say yes. And then again, offensively, I don't think there's any way that Texas is not better on Steve Sarkisian's side next season.
Worst rushing attack since 1944. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Clearly, that was a long time ago. That was during World War II. That was also 5 years after Texas A&M won its last national championship. So I just wanted everyone to be aware of that.
I figured you were like lining up for a dig at Texas there. You had some sort of like, oh, Texas was so much better back then than they were now. But no, taking a shot at the Aggies, that'll always resonate with everybody tuned in. But yeah, I mean, it's great. You know, Bucky and I talked about this a ton. Like, think about it. You guys had this problem. Alabama had this problem. Texas had this problem. These are like three of the best running back schools in the history of college football, and none of them could run the football. Obviously, Alabama's still alive right now, but it's not like they ran it really well against Oklahoma. They haven't run it all year. They've got an issue there. Oklahoma, you know, spent, what, $800K on Jay Knott. That was a total flop. Texas decided, you know, Texas, instead of going to the portal last year, they're like, you know what, Trey Wisner coming off a 1,000-yard season, even though it took him 15 games to get to 1,000 yards, they felt like he and C.J. Baxter coming off a serious knee injury and Christian Clark coming off of an Achilles injury and Jared Gibson, they thought that those guys were going to be good enough. So they bet on what they had and they whiffed. Alabama bet on what they had and they whiffed. Like, it's just kind of wild. You look at some of these blue blood programs who have always had great runners. They couldn't run the ball this season. Yeah. That's a big part. I know, you know, Texas was the worst record-wise at 9-3, so it's not like those teams were bad, but it was just weird to see that be a theme with some of those schools this year.
I have a theory on all of that, and I want to see what you think about that. But you're right. It's just so weird to see OU and Texas struggle to run the ball, because I remember a lot of years, where forget these teams having one good running back. Dude, they would have, like, two good running backs. I mean – or they'd have a freshman, Jamal Charles, in 2005, rolls in and is an absolute stud in that year that Texas wins the national championship. You could just always count on these teams having one or two. Here's my theory on it, and it drives me crazy that OU's been doing this, and I hope that they don't do it this offseason. Well, you know, we need a left tackle, so we're going to go to Western Carolina and get a guy with 1 year of eligibility, and we'll just plug him in there, all right? Hey, we need a right guard. Let's go get this guy from Stanford who's played a couple of years, and let's just plug him and play. Like, there's all these Band-Aid situations across the offensive line, and there's no, like, continuity. There's no young offensive linemen growing up together and playing in big games. And not that you want to be playing three freshman offensive linemen, like OU was doing at times this year, two true freshmen out there on the tackles. But at least they're going to grow, and at least you can look forward to the future with some highly talented offensive line where you can find some continuity. Like, I think this whole portal thing of going and getting an offensive lineman, especially from a lower level, and just plugging and playing for a year, I think stunts a lot of development. And I just think nobody really has any continuity up front with your O-line, with your run game. I hope OU gets away from that. I'm hoping that they do, but God, I'm just tired of talking about offensive linemen from Western Carolina and Stanford and Colorado State and other places like that.
Jeez. Well, it's interesting you say that, because Texas is entering that conversation for the first time ever, right? The Longhorns have not gone to the portal for offensive line help at all in the Steve Sarkisian era. They haven't needed to. They've recruited, they've evaluated, they've developed, and they've had really good offensive line plays for the majority of Sark's 5 years in Austin. But obviously this year was the exception. And, you know, you're losing DJ Campbell, you're losing Cole Hudson, you might be losing Trevor Goosby at left tackle, which I keep hearing that he's leaning towards coming back, but he's got a decision to make following tomorrow's Cheez-It Citrus Bowl. So, you know, Texas is going to have to go to the portal for offensive line help. I think they need three, Tyler. Yeah. And, you know, it's those guys are expensive. Now, the good news for Texas, if Goosby comes back, they're not going to need a tackle, because they've got Goosby at left tackle. They've got Brandon Baker, who will be going into his second year at right tackle. Goosby's a stud. Brandon Baker had a strong finish to the year. I think he's got a very bright future. So tackles are more expensive and more important. Good news is Texas shouldn't need any of those. But, yeah, the Longhorns, I mean, there's a lot of other teams that need interior offensive linemen too. And Texas might be in that boat to where, yeah, of course you'd love to get a guy with SEC or Big Ten experience to bring in as your guy. But you might have to look into the – you know, the G5 schools and just hope that, all right, this dude is going to be ready to take that leap and be a plug-and-play starter on a team that has national championship aspirations.
Well, you guys and OU as well better be ready to kind of hit the ground running once September gets here. It's something with the SEC that's more challenging but also more exciting. Instead of playing a bunch of reject Big 12 schools at 11 a.m., is gone are the years where, okay, well, we really don't know about Texas, but we're about to finally find out about Texas and what they really are second Saturday in October.
Yep.
We don't really know that much about Oklahoma, but we're going to find out everything we need to know second Saturday of October. Like, we used to have this joke, and we actually still do it, is, oh, we ain't showing nothing offensively until Texas and the Cotton Bowl. Because you kind of used to be able to do that your first four or five games of the year, right? But Texas, you guys play Ohio State, maybe the preseason number one team, and you go to Tennessee. OU goes to Michigan, they go to Georgia before they show up in the Cotton Bowl. So we're going to know everything we need to know about both teams before that game in October rolls around. It's way more fun, I think, but dude, it is. It's challenging. And I think you guys actually got dealt a tough schedule this time in the SEC. So that's good to see. It's about time.
Texas's schedule this year was tough. It wasn't as tough on paper before the year that people thought, but Texas had a very difficult schedule in 2025. So if you Gooners up there are still bragging on the Longhorn schedule, you are making a mistake, my friend.
Hey, Missouri is the one that it's like, really? Missouri gets this schedule? Seriously?
Yeah.
You talk about someone that I have not missed, and I know you got a little rock chalk in you, so I don't have to convince you of this, but I told you guys, if you have the means, go to Neyland. Don't go to Columbia. Columbia hasn't changed. Unless you're looking to score some meth up there, then maybe that's what you do. But Columbia is awful. It's terrible. I hate them. We call them mid-zoo around here. They're the worst, and I hate that we got to play those rejects every single year. So,
oh, I forgot. They're one of your three permanent opponents.
Oh,
right?
Well, everyone's just telling us. Oh, yeah, you guys are rivals, right? Yeah, you guys used to play a lot. You're rivals. The hell OU's a rival with Missouri? Are you kidding me? When is that? No one's ever looked at that as a rivalry here. But the SEC, man, one of the few complaints other than the god-awful officiating in this conference is that, they just decided that OU and Missouri are rivals all of a sudden. Now,
who's the third team? It's Texas. It's Missouri. Who's the third permanent opponent?
I want to see, to prove the point, just guess. Guess a few teams.
Okay, so it's not A&M. It should be A&M, but it's not A&M, clearly, because if you were having me guess, it's got to be somebody not as obvious as that. Arkansas? No. Oh, it's got to be somebody really random. I don't know. Mississippi State?
Ole Miss is their third.
Ole Miss?
Totally random. But OU, I guess, doesn't have a third that makes sense. Texas makes sense. Missouri didn't make sense, but didn't have a choice on that. I was hoping that it would be LSU because the past 2 years, OU had played LSU on Thanksgiving weekend, and it was pretty fun, and LSU didn't – because you needed somebody that you could play on rivalry week, right? LSU, I guess, is going to do the whole thing with Arkansas. I don't think they really care about – but OU-LSU every single year on Thanksgiving, like, there's some history, but it's not a rivalry or anything. I think that could have grown into something really, really fun, but – you got dealt Ole Miss instead, which you're going to play, I think, in October next year, and you're going to play Missouri every single year. We were all hoping for LSU, but you got dealt Ole Miss as well. And Lane Kiffin was, like, voiced his displeasure about Ole Miss playing OU. He's like, it doesn't make any sense. There's no history there whatsoever. He totally crapped on the idea of OU and Ole Miss playing every single year.
I feel like, look, maybe this is a child of the Big 12, the old Big 12, but I feel like you guys and A&M should be playing each other every year. No? That's obviously a bigger rivalry with more history than Ole Miss, and I would argue more than LSU too, right?
Yeah. I think, yes, I agree. I think there's more dislike or hate for A&M than there was at any other time when they were in the Big 12 together. Wow. Maybe that's the social media stuff. Maybe it's because A&M's always been annoying, but it got kicked up a significant level once they entered into the SEC. But A&M back in the Big 12 days around here, it was, I mean, it's tough to go down to Kyle Field. They always play OU tough there, but there wasn't a whole lot of hate. I think there's some legitimate hate now with those guys these days.
I'm also trying to give you guys an easy win playing against the Aggies every year. So
well, hey, we got them in November next year, so they'll have collapsed already, and it'll be an easy win, so I can't wait.
That is true. A couple of quick sponsor shout-outs here. We got a few more minutes with Tyler McComas of The Ref in Norman. Want to give some love to the Hecht Law Firm. Ryan Hurricane Hecht, a good friend of mine and your go-to personal injury attorney in Central Texas. If you or somebody you know gets hurt in a car accident, gets injured on the job, you need the very best by your side. That is Hurricane Hecht. He's not spending all of his time filming commercials, driving in Rolls Royces to get on private jets, hosting podcasts with little girls, standing on tops of cars. Y'all see those weird commercials? It's weird. Those guys are filming those. They're not actually in the courtroom fighting to get you what you deserve after a serious personal injury. Hurricane Hecht is a junkyard dog. He's a great guy. Again, he's been a friend of mine for more than a decade. He's super compassionate with his clients, but he is going to fight like hell to get you every dollar that you deserve. And the best part, you don't pay unless he wins your case. That's right. Zero legal fees unless Hurricane Hecht can flood your pockets with cash. Let him blow their case wide open. 512-938-8929. You can find out more online at hechtlawfirm.com. That's H-E-C-H-T lawfirm.com. And also a shout out to our friends at Hat Creek Burger Company. Oh man, you're looking for a great meal. You've done enough cooking this holiday season. Go get you a Hat Creek Burger or a chicken sandwich or some chicken nuggets or a salad. They've got the great fries. They've got the milkshake. They've got queso fries and queso tots right now. Limited time offers. Those are fantastic additions to the Hat Creek menu. They are great. More than 25 locations across the state of Texas. Some of them are serving breakfast too. Go get you a Hat Creek Burger today. All right, Tyler, I want to follow up here a couple more minutes with you before we bring on Wags and Double R. You know, you talked about Texas playing Ohio State this year and Oklahoma playing Michigan. Like, I commend both schools for being willing to schedule these tough marquee non-conference games against blue blood programs, because there's so many teams around college football who aren't doing that. But obviously it's been a big conversation around here, and Texas missed the playoff because they played Ohio State this season, right? If the Longhorns played somebody else in the non-con that they could have beaten easily, they would have been 10-2. They would have been in the CFP. Instead, Texas is 9-3, and they get left out. Maybe that happens to Oklahoma next year, right? The Sooners could lose that game at Michigan in week two. I don't think y'all will, but you could lose that game. And instead of being 10-2, you're 9-3, and you're on the outside looking in on the college football playoff. Your thoughts, and do you think it still makes sense with the way the playoff is currently set up for our schools, Texas and Oklahoma, to keep scheduling these type of big games in the non-con?
In an 8-game SEC schedule, sure, yeah. 9-game SEC. Dude, you go from playing 8 SEC games this past year with 2 bye weeks to 9 SEC games and just 1 bye week? Like, man, that's... So, yeah, with an 8-game SEC schedule, I think so. 9 games, man, I think makes it a lot more difficult. And we're not really having those conversations around here. Like you said, get beat by Michigan next year, go 9-3, and be one of the first two teams left out. And I think that we're singing a different tune. Because as of right now, OU still got, you know, some notable road games in the non-conference on the books. They go to Michigan next year. I think the next 3 years, I think it's the next 3 years, OU has a road game in the non-conference, which is crazy. They go to Michigan this year. They go to SMU the year after, and I think they go to Houston the year after that. I may have SMU and Houston mixed up, but, God, got to go to freaking Houston in September. That's going to be miserable. But they've got, like, 3 consecutive years of road games in the non-conference, which is weird. They still got Nebraska on the books, and I think 29 and 30. They've got Clemson on the books, and like 34, 35, 35, 36. All those are a ways out. So I think OU is still going to schedule somewhat difficult non-conference games, but I'm like you, man. I'm just wondering if those are going to go by the wayside, especially for teams in the SEC. Now, TV can dictate a lot of that. Maybe sure. Some ways TV can tell you, like, no, we want those inventory games. You're going to schedule them. But, yeah, man, you go lose at Michigan, you're 9-3 and get left out. It's going to be a totally – because everyone now is excited about the trip to Ann Arbor. Oh, we get to see the big house for the first time. This is going to be great. But if it costs you a chance at a playoff, then it's going to be a different thought around here, I think, to your point.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I think most fans love those big-time non-conference games and those matchups between teams that don't often play each other, right? I mean, Texas fans got to experience the Big House for the first time last year. That's a big deal. You know, Texas has only played in the Horseshoe a couple of times in their program's history. Like, it's fun to get to make those trips and experience those settings. But with the way the playoff is currently set up, and that's why this conversation might be a waste of time, because we already know the playoff is changing next year. We don't know what it's changing to, but we know they're going to change up the system, and there will probably be more teams involved. So maybe assurances are coming that, hey, you're not going to get punished for playing games like that. But obviously, with the way it stands right now, I mean, that's a tough situation for Texas this year. You saw a few 9-3 teams get left out of the playoff last year. I mean, hell, 10-2 Vanderbilt got left out of the CFP this year. So it's like, there's no, we need to stop. One of the biggest problems with college football, and there are a million right now, is that we treat every conference and every schedule like they're the exact same. Like, yeah, this is the NFL or something. It's like, that's just not the case. So the playoff cannot be set up the way that it has been set up if these teams are going to continue to be playing the types of schedules that they are playing. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it was an embarrassment this year. The fact that those were the two night games and the playoff this year. Oh. I mean, come on. Hey, one quick question just for my own betting purposes.
Yeah.
I will not be betting on Texas tomorrow. If I do bet, it will be on Michigan. Now, these bowl games, I know you guys got some players in the portal that aren't going to play at running back and all that. But these bowl games so much are, what's your give a damn meter? What's your care meter in this game? I feel like Texas' care meter is actually pretty high to get to that 10th win. Am I reading that situation correctly?
I don't know. I just don't know how you can accurately predict that, right? Like, the players and coaches are saying yes. They're talking about, Steve Sarkisian has openly talked about, you know, getting to 10 wins being a big deal. Texas hasn't had three straight 10-win seasons since 07 to 09, so that's on the table. And just sending this senior class out with a bang and ending the year on a high note. Like, that's, they're talking the right way. They're saying the right things, but ultimately, I mean, I don't know. We've seen, and I brought up Georgia in hour number one, right? Georgia got left out of the playoff in 2023. They were on a mission to prove the committee wrong, and they went out and boat raced Florida State, one of the biggest bowl beatdowns we've ever seen. And then you look at Alabama last year, right, against Michigan, the same Michigan team. You know, they were 9-3, left out of the college football playoff, and they look like they would have rather have been anywhere else in the world at that point. So, look, Texas, I do think Texas is going to try to win the game. I mean, they're starting Arch Manning. Like, everybody who is not opting out or not in the portal is going to play. So it's not like they're just experimenting. Oh, let's see what KJ Lacy has as our backup quarterback. Let's give Arch the day off. It's a meaningless game. They're not doing that. So, yeah, they want to win, but I don't know how you can really predict. I mean, what's Michigan going to be? Like, maybe Texas doesn't want to be there, but is Michigan, like, are they so checked out on the season because of the Sharon Moore thing? Like, I don't know how you could predict what either of these teams are going to look like tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, they got a new coach. You're already looking ahead to next year, your own business decisions that you have to make. They felt betrayed. No, I mean, you're right. I guess my thought was maybe getting that 10th win for Texas this year is a big deal, and they did end the year playing their best football. Like, I think that's definitely fair to say. That's tough to carry over when, what, Taft's not playing right, and what, DeAndre Moore won't be there. Some other running backs won't be there as well. But they definitely ended the season playing their best football. So I probably shouldn't expect that version of them. But who knows, man? Maybe Arch comes out and just lights it up tomorrow.
They're going to need it. Yeah, they're down 7 starters on defense. And then their running back room is down 4 guys. DeAndre Moore is out. So, you know, if these two teams were fully healthy, I think Texas would win fairly easily. But again, I don't know. Texas deserves to be a 7-point favorite. I do think Texas is going to win, but I will not be putting my easy-earned money on that. I could tell you that.
Maybe a Dusty Mangum game-winning field goal will be the difference tomorrow.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he'll come back. He's got eligibility remaining, I think. Just sue the NCAA. He'll get another year. I think that's how it works. Tyler, this was fun, man. Thanks so much for chopping it up this morning, brother. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Anytime. Go blue. See you tomorrow.
Come on. There's no need for. Hey, roll tide, sir. Yeah. Roll tide. Thanks for doing this.
Did you hear we blew a 17-0 lead? Yeah, thanks for
that. Thank you for saying that. And it'll be more than 1,000 days between touchdowns for Oklahoma against Texas. I want to remind you on your way out. Appreciate it, brother. Happy New Year. Yeah,
you bet. Anytime, man.
All right, there he goes, Tyler McComas. And we bring on the boys from Chaos Theory. It's Double R. It's Wags. Gentlemen, good morning.
Hey, good morning, dude. What's up?
Well, it's good to have some Longhorn fans on.
Where are you at? Are you in prison?
I'm not in prison, although some have probably called Columbus, Ohio prison over the years.
What are you doing there?
I have a New Year's Eve wedding tomorrow night.
In Ohio? You and in the
Ohio.
Wedding.
Man. Yeah, it's my first time in Ohio in my life. All I have to say right now is it's cold.
That's what I was about to ask.
So what's the weather like?
Tempe
like
15, out there.
15, 10 degrees, 15
degrees.
So we've
got 20 degrees right now. Nice warm 20 degrees. But how about a feels like of 2 at the moment?
Nah, I'm all right.
It's nipply.
Yeah. The high today is 25. I will be here till Thursday before I fly back to Austin on the 1st.
You hanging out with Buckeye fans? What's going on up there?
I guess. Oh, it's a wedding. Yeah. The groom is an Ohio State fan. The bride's actually a Michigan fan, so I'm questioning this whole experience here. Is there even real love going on? I'm not entirely sure. But it's funny because Ohio State plays the night of the wedding.
Yeah.
Like, the wedding starts at 7:30 Eastern time, and kickoff between Ohio State and Miami in the Cotton Bowl is 7:30 Eastern time. So I saw the groom last night as I was checking into the hotel. I'm like, dude, what are you going to do? And he's like, no, don't worry. Like, we got a giant projector on the dance floor. Like, we're gonna be okay. We're going to make sure the game is on. So I don't know if I should say this because I might lose my invite 2 days early, but I'm kind of hoping for a Miami upset so we get some major chaos.
There you go.
Tomorrow night on New Year's when the ball
drops. We're going to have chaos at a wedding, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But the high temp, guys, the entire high for the 3 days that I'm here, it will get to 31 degrees. That's the high tomorrow. So
any snow on the ground already?
No, there's some flurries right now. There were some flurries last night.
You gotta watch out for the ice. That's the snow's fine, but it's the ice. Usually they got some pretty decent snow plows and good inclement weather plans up there. And unlike Texas, where they only got one plow.
Why are you telling me to watch for ice? You should be telling Rodney to be watching for ice these days.
That's right. I have to. I really have to. Any time that I hear the house shift, I'm like, holy shit, here they come. Here they come.
That was mean. Sorry about that, Double R.
It's only half of me that's offended, not the white part.
That's true. You know, it's funny because, like, I was looking at the weather in Columbus, and I'm like, dude, our flight's not going to make it. Because if it was 20 degrees and windy and snowing in Texas, every flight would be canceled for the next week.
Yeah.
And we had like a 20-minute delay in Austin yesterday, and then that was it. Like, they are perfectly fine. They're used to it up here. I was talking to my Uber driver last night, and he's like, yeah, this is nothing. Yeah. This is just how it is this time of year. I'm like, golly, I miss Texas already, boys. Like, I'm going to be inside for like 95% of this trip, and I still miss. I mean, when it's you dark. It's Thursday on the 1st.
Yeah. Every time I have to go to Springfield for work, I'm over there freaking out, man, because it's so cold. When I was up there a couple weeks ago, it was like 7 degrees, and I'm like, man, this is horrible. And they're like, oh, this is nothing. They're like, this is tame.
Yeah.
And I will say this, because there's a lot of Ohio State people. I was told that there is a certain gate at the Horseshoe that is always open. So I might be making my way over to the campus of Ohio State.
It is way too cold to do that shit.
And marking my territory.
It'll freeze as it's coming out.
Yeah, well, I'll give the yellow snow to an Ohio State fan at some point. Wow. They can eat that if they want.
You know, what are you wearing?
Oh, I got my Sabrina shirt on.
Sabrina. Yeah. The Sabrina Carpenter's hoodie. Yeah. Of course you do.
So I have to tell you guys, I woke up this morning. I woke up very thankful because, as you know, disappointed as we are about the Texas football season, you know what's tonight, right? The Alamo Bowl. And we're not in it. We're not going to San Antonio, boys.
Remember the Alamo Bowl.
I almost wish we were going to the Alamo Bowl, though, because it's not that far of a trip for the boys. You know what I mean? Go in, have your spring game, come back.
Don't say it, Wags. We've done that enough. I can't make another trip to the Alamo Dome in my life.
Well, follow-up question. Yeah. What are bowls now? And I kind of asked this to Double R yesterday. What are bowls now these days outside of the playoffs?
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I think for some teams, for like not Texas and Michigan, I think a G5 school is, it still means a lot and the players sure. really care. And it's
yeah, I sound like an asshole, you know, a spoiled yeah, asshole.
It's a fair question. Like there are plenty of college football fans, yep. even of those smaller teams that are asking that same thing right now. So, yeah, they don't mean as much as they used to. I don't know how you could argue the opposite. So, yeah, look, I'm sure some fans will be going for Texas, right? It's a nice trip to Orlando. You get to go to Disney on New Year's. You get some warm weather. There's some perks for the players, some perks for the fans, some perks for everybody involved, but it ain't the same. There's no way around it.
Hey, and to answer, I heard you and Tyler talking about the motivation of, I mean, we know the motivation of Texas, at least we think we do, but coming up bottom of the hour, 9:30, we have a Michigan insider that will join us, and we will get the true feel of, you know, the coaching change. I mean, what are they thinking from what I've gathered from talking to her a little bit offline? I think they're coming in, you know, with a little giddy up in their step as things are going in the right direction, maybe over there.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to listen. I did DM Sharon Moore and have not heard back. We are trying to get him on the show, but so far no response. So
you don't look right.
Yeah, I'm not hot enough. I don't have enough up here and back there right. to get right. a response from yeah. Michigan yeah. coach.
Yeah, wrong kind of guy.
I'd prefer to talk to y'all for hours so I don't have to go out in this weather, but I've got to go out in this weather. So y'all have
brave
a
it. Brave good it, buddy. One. Brave
and I guess I'll talk to y'all. We've got pre and post game tomorrow, right. yep. but the next crosstalk we'll have will be on Friday. So happy New Year to you guys, and see y'all soon.
Be safe, dude.